Let me invite you to just take a few nice deep breaths. If you'd like to allow your eyes to close, you can go ahead and do that, or just let them remain open in a soft gaze. But as you breathe, just notice your breath and allow yourself to arrive. It's the holiday season, so much activity, so many things. Places to go, things to do, people to see. Just allow yourself to settle and arrive here right now. And maybe just allow as you breathe, allow your awareness to go within, to your heart. We just got done singing the gospel in one word, is love. How is love in your heart today? As you become aware of your thoughts, things on your mind, maybe tension or sensation in your body. Can you meet whatever's here with love? Maybe just noticing how it is to be still, of the hustle and bustle. How is it to be still, to be quiet? Just allow yourself to be still and to be quiet. And then gradually allowing your awareness back to the room around you, the people around you, the sounds around you, and just allowing some of that love that is within to be spread to the room around today. And taking a couple of nice deep breaths, and then with gentleness and care, gradually opening your eyes and coming back to the room.
Love, 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 the gospel in one word is love. Love thy neighbor as thyself. gospel in one word is love. Love thy neighbor as thyself. Love, love, love. Love, 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 love the gospel in one word is love. Love thy neighbor as thyself. Love, love, love. Love, love, love. Love,
Can I steal your line, welcome loved ones? Is that what you said? Yeah, I just love that. Welcome, loved ones. I just like how that feels. Yeah, you are loved. And I'm just so grateful that you're joining us here today. And if you're joining us online, it's good. It's good to be together. And if you haven't picked up by now, today we're reflecting on the love of Advent, the love of the holiday season. And my hope and my intention today is that as we sing the Christmas songs and enjoy the decorations, Sina, by the way, was our decoration champion this year. Thank you for just the wonderful things. And, you know, it's, yeah. And it's, you know, it's good to just gather and sing songs and enjoy the decorations and the good food and the holidays and the parties. And, you know, our mission statement here at this church is to live, love, and uplift lives. And so as I was thinking about love of Advent, I wanted to just reflect a little bit on love in action. What does it mean? You know, it's good to reflect on the Christmas story and what happened thousands of years ago. But I think we all would agree that that story can inspire us and move us to action and being part of living love and uplifting lives today. And so I'm hoping that today is an encouragement to you. If you're on your track and you know where you're going and you know what your plan and your mission is, then today will be an encouragement to you. But maybe you're wondering, you know, what do I want to do? What do I want to create this Christmas? I hope that after our time here together today that maybe some things will become clear to you. So to start us off, I have asked R to come on up here right now. Would you join me in welcoming R? I'm sure you've seen R around, and we've been really blessed to have him share his musical gifts on the drums with us. And we just got to talking this week about what love in action means to him, and asked him if he would be willing to just come share with all of us some thoughts about how that is in his life. So here you go, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you, Pastor James. I'll start a little timer because I don't know when to shut up. So in the spirit of the Oxford group, because they were the formation of AA, which is a big part of my life, I'll open with my weakness. I struggle with insecurity, which translates as like defensive, condescending judgment of others, which is just defense mechanism that I've developed throughout life, and it's my major barrier with my connectivity with others. So if I seem standoffish, it's because I'm still processing how to navigate that. I'd also like to start by reading what God is to me. The Tao Te Ching 1. The Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. The unnameable is the eternally real. Naming is the origin of all particular things. Free from desire, you realize the mystery. Caught in desire, you see only the manifestations. Yet mystery and manifestations arise from the same source. This source is called darkness. Darkness within darkness, the gateway to all understanding. So, you know, early on, I learned I can't trust other people, and that's what created my barriers to intimacy, and I sought intimacy through other lower vibrational versions. But I've always loved life. I love life, and so I had a lot of actions of loving life, but It's only been recently, with especially my daughter's birth, that I've started to recognize that even though I love people, I don't trust them, but I still love them. The biggest thing that I learned is that people don't know that I love them because I don't show that I love them. So if I can't have actions displaying love for them, they don't actually know I love them, even if I tell them that I do. So that was a really important thing that I learned. And, you know, so the biggest way to show, I'm pretty nervous, so the big, you can probably see that. The biggest way, though, for me to show love, I'm very intellectual, so I need a very potent intellectual argument. So for me, it was Jordan Peterson's description of the Christ story, just being simply other-centered sacrifice for the community and for the other. And so that's, you know, what I really focus a lot of my efforts on now is, for me, I'm always seeking through prayer and meditation, contemplation, to what the next indicated right thing might, to improve my contact, my conscious contact with the Tao, with the higher power that's communicating with me and helping guide me. So usually, you know, the next right thing for me is, if there's something helpful that I can do that is going to help other people, and I'm very uncomfortable about doing it, and I'm very doubtful about getting out of it what I want for myself, I typically consider that a next indicated right action, and I try to move in that direction. So a lot of love and action for me is just I try to get outside of, because I love life, but I got to get out of that self-centered love and, like, get out of my head and try to pay attention to the others and see, like, what does the other need, you know, which is the beginning of this was my daughter and my now wife. Like, what does Kelly need to know that I love her? And I spend a lot of my emotional contemplative time, you know, thinking about that, and I try to lean towards, like, sacrificing too much, even though I end up feeling resentful and have to deal with all those emotional, got to navigate that emotional life, but I try to, like, lean towards a little more sacrifice of myself for the other. And so I think other-centered sacrifice is the greatest action of love for me. Thanks.
Wow.
You know, we think about love, you know, is all the things that we do. But what I appreciate as I've gotten to know R and Kelly and Jenny, their new family, is just the honesty and the transparency and the heart and the spirit around and behind, you know, insecurity, trust, nervousness, you know. I don't know about you, but I can connect to that. You know, I still experience that at times. And I think that is what makes love impactful on a heart and soul level. I was away in Seattle for a few days this week at doing some meditation work, and I just came away from it thinking, you know, there are many things that we can offer each other, you know, and yet in the process of offering each other, you know, it can be difficult, as our saying, we run into things. And so I just got to thinking, you know, at a fundamental base level, what if loving ourselves is the greatest gift we could give to this world? Think about that. I know some of you might go, that sounds awfully selfish and narcissistic. It could be. But if you think about your engagement, and we're going to talk about today different ways and experiences of engaging each other and engaging the world, the more that we love ourselves, I believe, the more authentically and genuinely we can love those that are around us. And by contrast, if we try to use other people, if we try to use other things, if we try to use experiences to try to love ourselves, we just get in an endless spin cycle, because that's just not how love is. It's an inside-out job. And so we start on the inside. And so this is where now we come back to the story of Advent, the story of Christmas, the story of waiting. And so before we talk about before we launch into thinking about love in action and what that can mean for us here, I want to just link to a few thoughts that I shared with you last week. And by the way, thank all of you for how long I spoke last week, and you're hanging out and sticking with me. Thank you. I'm not going to speak that long today, trust me. So, but I just really, especially our tech team and musicians for just, you know, it's an extra long day, and our children's and youth workers, it's just an extra long day for them. So thank you for that. But as we think about love and action and the love of the Advent season, Advent is a season of waiting. It's a season of watching. It's a season of anticipation. And if we consider Advent just in its Christmas story cloaking, there's really not a lot of waiting and anticipation. Why? Because we kind of know what's going to come, right? You know, waiting for the birth of Jesus. Okay, well, we all know how that, if you're from the Christian tradition, you know, if you're familiar with how that story goes. But I think the more helpful question and the more useful question is to consider, for what am I waiting in my life today? Is there something in my life? I was driving back from Seattle yesterday. It was really foggy. and I just noticed myself, first of all, just getting annoyed by the fog. It's like, darn it, I can't see anything, you know? And I thought, wait a minute, you know, how many things in our life, you know, appear foggy and unclear? Advent is about that season of navigating our way through the darkness and through the fog. And so as we think about that, thinking about Christmas as a mythical love story, something to reflect on is this. There's a difference between sacred silence and stillness. If you remember last week, we talked about the story of the angel appearing to Zechariah, who is going to be the father of the one come to be known as John the Baptist. In the course of being told by an angel that he was going to give birth, he asked the angel, "How can this be?" And as a result of him asking, "How can this be?" he was gifted with the gift of silence. And it was funny because I think, you know, we kind of laughed and chuckled, boy, that's mean. How mean of God to do something like that. And it's worth reflecting on how deeply embedded our idea of God being retributive or punishing it really is. Even Santa, what does the song say? He's making a list and checking it twice, gonna find out who's what. Yeah, yeah. It's just embedded in our psyche, and this idea of God. You know, in the church I grew up in, you know, I heard all the time, you know, God loves everybody, but sin has consequences, you know. And it used to just grate on me because it just sounded so not God-like, you know. But what if moments of silence, moments of speechlessness, moments of stillness were gifts, and the silence that Zechariah experienced wasn't some kind of punishment of God, you asked the wrong question or you got the answer wrong, but rather a gift. It's this idea of wonder and awe. As we are in this season of darkness, and I hope you come to the solstice service on Saturday. I'm really looking forward to it, you know. But just continue to notice your relationship with silence and stillness. You can be silent, but still have, you know, a million thoughts going in your mind. But this idea of stillness and just allowing yourself to be still and knowing what it's like to be still can be a really helpful spiritual practice. So just be reminded that in this season that we're in right now, as the days are continuing to get shorter, next Sunday at 7:03 a.m., days will start getting longer, so something to anticipate there. You're all smiling. Am I weird that I kind of? Well, I guess I am, because I like snow too, and I know a lot of you don't like snow, and I kind of like the darkness. So all right, here's something else as we think about this. Love is always breaking out of the containers we make for it, and I want to invite you to think about this when you think about the Christmas story as a mythical love story. Okay. And by myth, to say something is a myth doesn't mean that it's not true. In fact, myths contain truths that are timeless. But what considering the Christmas story as a myth invites us to is to read it and interact with it differently. We don't read the Bible, we don't read the Quran, we don't read the Tao Te Ching, we don't read the Bhagavad Gita or other sacred texts like we do the Coeur d'Alene Press or the New York Times or whatever you want to say, okay? Rather, to allow our, it's the difference between seeking the truth of a story, what are the facts, to what is the truth in the story. I don't know that we can fact check our way into the Christmas story, and to do so misses the point. Even this notion of a virgin birth, how that all happened is interesting musing for scientists and metaphysicians. But what's interesting to me in the story of the virgin birth is a surprised, unplanned pregnancy. A surprise that comes into our life unannounced. A surprise that comes in and really disrupts the status quo, you see. And so as we think about how love is wanting to unfold in your life, oftentimes before something really special happens, a time of disruption is going to have. Ara and I talked about that earlier, that you know we get when we anticipate something great happening, it also can be followed and preceded by a time of incredible testing and trial. So notice that, welcome that, be open for it. And there you go again, myths contain holy, timeless truths. So as we think about love in action, any of you think about building bridges, you know, bridge building? Yeah. Have any of you experienced burnt bridges in the past? Did you just say that? We're tracking, Cena, yeah. Yeah, anybody experienced burnt bridges, either bridges that have been burned or bridges that, yeah. And so, you know, sometimes when we think of, okay, bridges that are burned in the past, you know, let's build bridges moving forward. But what happens when you build a bridge or you're seeking to build a bridge and you come up against a wall that seems too high to go over, or maybe a wall that is too wide to go around. Maybe you don't know how high this wall is. You don't know how high this or how wide this wall is. Have you ever experienced something like that, an obstacle or a challenge? Here's something interesting to think about. What if instead of God's love and the working of love being a bridge, what if God's love worked as a tunneler? How are tunnels different than bridges? What do you think, Cena?
Oh. To me, you would be seeing kind of tunnel vision, obviously. You wouldn't be seeing anything else. You'd just be focused on the one bad thing. You wouldn't be able to see anything else. You're just bad or good, you're just there. Mm-hmm. And that's all you can see. And then once you get there, then you actually can see the big picture once you're there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. What are some other ways that tunnels are different than bridges? David?
Tunnels go through resistance.
Go through resistance. Yeah. You want to just pass the mic behind you there? Thanks.
A tunnel will allow you to focus on the end of it as you go on through your existence. You are focused in one direction. Of course, as railroad guys, we build tunnels through rock in one direction from one point to the other. Sometimes we have to go around a corner to make the track curve, but we still have one determined activity to see the light.
Mm. Thank you. Well, anybody else? Yeah, I saw a few more hands up here. Tammy.
They're loud while you're making them. They're loud, destructive, and earth-shattering.
Tunnels are? Yeah. Yeah. How else? Yeah.
What about the tunnel of love?
Oh, yes, the tunnel of love. Hmm. And the other, tell us more. Yeah. What's the difference between being on a bridge and in a tunnel? What's your personal experience?
I see it differently.
I see it a little differently. I see it, I think of a bridge. You're kind of going over. You're saying, okay, let's just not worry about this so much. We're just going to kind of go over the top of it, and we're just going to move on. Where the tunnel, you have to work through it, work through the problem a little bit more, rather than just ignoring it and bypassing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Think about your experience being in a tunnel and being on a bridge. How would you describe the difference?
Well, from an engineering standpoint, but from going through the tunnels, like up in Kellogg, you have to go into, you can snow wheel through them or hike through them. So you wait for that light at the end of the tunnel. And once you see that light, you know you're coming out, that you're not going to be stuck in the tunnel.
Mm-hmm. Can you always see the light at the end of the tunnel when you're in it? Or do you have to pray that there is light? Yeah. Who else? Yeah.
Well, from a sense of perspective, and when you're on a bridge, you can see where you are. And you can see around you, and you can tell where you are. Where you're in a tunnel, you have to rely on a different set of senses to have any idea of where you're at.
Yep, absolutely. What else? The difference between being in a tunnel or on a bridge.
What just came to my mind was, on a bridge, you're moving by sight. On a tunnel, you're moving by faith.
All right. I might just have to stop speaking and let you all finish this message, because you're getting the idea. As you think about creating and offering love this Christmas season, what would shift and what would change if you thought of building tunnels instead of bridges? Something else, tunnels. What would a bunch of tunnels under a wall do to the wall, do you think? Huh? Weaken it. Yeah, weaken the foundation. Yeah, that's an interesting little side effect. So I'm wondering if maybe God, Spirit, Source, Love, whatever you want to call it, life, the cosmos, the universe, is inviting you into a tunnel. Not just this holiday season, but, you know, in life. What if, as a spiritual community seeking to live love and uplift lives, God is inviting us to do some tunneling? What would that be like? A lot of you already said, having to move by faith. You know, when I think of being on a bridge, yeah, you can see the sights, and you kind of know where you are, you know where you're going. Tunnels are, it can be a little claustrophobic. You know, and if you can't see that light at the end, you better pray that there is. But if not, you're just kind of going by faith. But think back of the Advent story now, and all the mystery of it, and all of the surprises, you know. Maybe Spirit, maybe God, in the outworking of love, was working at building tunnels. So, something to think about as you think about how love is being worked out in your life, and what is the love story of your life. Maybe this holiday season, you could be a tunneler. So, just holding that thought now, just in your mind, I want to just offer you four experiences and four expressions of love in action. And I hope that these experiences and expressions will help you be able to frame and just better contextualize whatever experience you might be finding yourself in. Okay? So first, we'll talk about experiences of love in action. If you can't see the slide here, on the vertical axis is willingness to act and support, less at the bottom, more at the top. On the bottom horizontal axis, it's your understanding of the other's experience, okay? So, and as these come up, it would, again, be easy to evaluate these or judge these as good or bad or better or best. And I offer these not in that context, but just as a way for you to be able to know yourself, where you are in a particular relationship, in a particular situation, in a particular work of love. So when we think of some of the lowest willingness to act and understanding of the other's experience, it's the experience of pity. You know, I feel sorry for you. Have you ever felt pity for something? Sure. Yeah, I think sometimes we think, oh, pity is a, you know, immature thing or whatever. But let's face it, sometimes we see something and just the immediate reaction is to feel sorry. Have you ever been the recipient of pity? How does that feel? Not so good.
No.
Yeah. What doesn't feel good about it?
They don't understand.
They don't understand. There's no connection. Exactly. No connection, right? Okay. So for a little more willing to support and a little more understanding of the other's experiences, we can think of that as sympathy. Sympathy. I feel for you. So it's not just I'm feeling sorry for you, but I'm beginning to, you know, feel for you. Okay? What do you think the next one is? Huh? Of course. You're all so smart. Yeah, okay. As we begin to feel a little bit more willingness to act and a little more understanding of the other's experience, empathy. I feel with you. How would you describe, just like in a sentence, how would you contrast sympathy and empathy? I mean, just the felt experience of it. Any?
Willingness to do something about it.
Uh-huh. What else? What's that? Being in their shoes. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. What else?
Remembering that we're all one.
Uh-huh.
Far more respectful.
Far more respectful. Yes. Absolutely. Okay. Nancy, this is what you said. I think at this highest level of willingness to act and support and understanding of the other's experience is a sense of compassion. I'm here to help. I'm here to do something. Okay? Now, all of these, again, can be underutilized, overutilized. The point here, again, is not to have one elevated over the other, but just to help you understand, you know, where you fall in a particular something or other. What can be helpful is where you notice yourself experiencing the most compassion, that could very well be the area where love is wanting to be expressed in your life. Because again, that the difference between the bridge from empathy to compassion takes us into that place of thinking and feeling something into, I want to do something. And oftentimes, we sometimes can get tripped up in acting, at least I do, because I can get in my head about, well, I want to have the right motives, or you know, I'm not sure if I have the right motives, so therefore I'm not going to do something. This is where I love what Richard Rohr says. He says, we don't think ourselves into new ways of living or acting. We act ourselves into new ways of thinking. So sometimes just the mere act of being willing to offer help, offer support, offer connection, can rewire some of the feelings and some of the emotional experience. Have you ever experienced that in your life? You know, I mean, where you've done something? Sure, yeah. So just be open to that. All right. The next one are expressions of love and action. And this is taking it a little bit deeper and a little bit more, helping us be a little bit more aware of some of the inner dynamics of how we interact with people and situations. So on the vertical graph is risk, low risk at the bottom, higher risk at the top. On the horizontal graph at the bottom is lower risk to the left and higher engagement to the right, lower engagement to the left, okay? And the first low risk, low engagement is being for something or someone. I'm for them. Okay, I have strong feelings about it, so I'm for this particular cause, all right? As we go higher up the risk scale, but lower on the engagement scale, we can work for something or for someone. We can join a board, we can join a club, we can join an awareness group or a focus group or a support group. If we drop down to the horizontal axis, we can work with someone. Okay, we can work alongside a person. We can work alongside an organization and make a difference there. What is the common thread, though, in all three of these from an involvement perspective?
You have to work together.
You have to work together. Uh-huh. Yes. Say more about the separation. What is the separation? Yes,
Yes, it's me versus someone else, or it's me, you know, different than someone else, okay? Again, I think this tunneling work of God and this really deep transformative work of God that's subversive is this fourth one, being with someone or something involves the highest amount of engagement and the highest amount of risk. Why is being with someone risky? What are some of the risks that are involved? What do you think? Yeah. How? How can we? I mean, you're exactly right. What are some of the ways that we might be changed? You might get hurt. Yes. What else? Pick up a bad habit they have? Sure, are.
You'd be held accountable for their mistakes.
Be held accountable for their mistakes? Uh-huh. What else? What about, yes?
You might have to give up a limiting belief.
A limiting belief.
You might have to give something up.
Yeah. What about power and control? Which of these four has the least power and the least control? Being with. Yeah. When you work for, work with, or be for something, there's still a little bit of power. Power in that you're either over it or under it or beside it, but separate from it, as we've already talked about. And embedded in that differentiation is a sense of power and control. Oh, I can extricate myself from this situation, you know, or if it doesn't go the way I want, I can whatever. But when you're with someone or you're with someone in solidarity, genuinely, yeah, there's not a lot of power because I don't know how this is going to turn out. I might lose something. I might have a limiting belief challenge, which is actually a good thing, a helpful thing. Oftentimes, limiting beliefs, unconscious limiting beliefs, can be exposed by ourselves when we're just solidly with someone. I was thinking about this in the context of immigration. I used to talk about this with my dad all the time because, you know, I would say, hey, let's build bridges, not walls, you know. And my dad being who he was, he said, yeah, James, I hear you. I want to build bridges and build walls, but tell me this. Do you have a lock on your front door? Do you have a fence around your yard? Do you have a lock on your car? Uh-huh. So just think about that and think about your consistency and your integrity when you're thinking about immigration. And at least in my own thought process, I've become aware of how I want to outsource it. Let somebody else take care of that. You know, I'll be for it. I'll work for it. I might even work with it. But would I welcome a stranger into my home? I don't know. Would I keep my door open? Would I keep my car unlocked? Would I tear my fence down? You know, again, the point here is not to invoke judgment or condemnation of something, but to invite you into your internal experience about your willingness or resistance to be with someone or something. And it's not a one-size-fits-all answer. There's no one right answer at all. But my purpose in doing this is I think it helps us to more honestly engage with other people who might have differing points of view. At least it does for me. And we can stop pointing fingers and labeling and throwing rocks at each other and come to more areas of commonality and understanding. Make sense? Yeah.
Wouldn't working for somebody have a sense of power?
Yeah.
I'm curious. Working, the question was power.
Yes.
I was curious, what about working for? Because you have fairly high risk, but you have very little engagement, so therefore you can bail out and have that power of divorce to wash your hands of it.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of saying, oh, no, I'm stuck with this situation, even though I've got a feeling, don't like it, or I'm risk or emotional risk are intertwined, I could just go, oh, the heck, I'm out of here.
Right. And in
you're
saying exactly what I'm hoping I'm communicating as well. With all three of these, that capacity to separate, to bail out, to, you know, whatever, distance yourself, is there's a sense of power in there, you know, power and agency, as opposed to being with someone, you're solidly with a person or you're with an organization. You might have something, you know. It might be a teacher learning something from a student. It might be a boss learning something from a subordinate. It might be a minister learning something from the congregation. You see, there's a divestiture, or not a divestiture of power, but a more sharing of power. Maybe that would be more accurate. In being with, it truly is the place where I think that there's a more sharing of power rather than a distancing of it. Yes?
Being with is being open to.
Yes. Yes. Being with, being open to an unprotected, undefended heart. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, no, thank you very much for that. I don't mean to, and if I did, I acknowledge this. Being with is not the place of powerlessness. It could be the place of, in fact, the greatest power from a synergistic perspective. Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you for clarifying that. Yeah, I appreciate it.
In the highest form of love.
Absolutely, absolutely. Again, go back now to the Christmas story. And Mary's willingness to be with the divine in bringing forth a child into the world. There's a cooperation and a willingness and an openness to say, yes, may it be as you say. In spite of, we talked about this last week, all kinds of cultural and religious and spiritual barriers and norms that were just inside out and upside down. No, I am with love. I am with spirit in this unfolding. The encouragement to each and every one of us today, myself included, is if you find yourself in the crucible of a trial, a family member maybe you haven't seen in a while, or a neighbor, or something at work, or a challenge here at this church. You know, there's so many amazing things happening, and such a longing and a yearning to do more that sometimes it can appear like roadblocks. You know, let that struggle, let that discomfort teach you about opening yourself even more to life as it is, and watch the power. Watch the power that comes from being more one with God, with each other, and with our community. Amen?
Amen.
Amen. I'd like to just close a little differently today. I know we've got a song. In fact, I might need your help, choir, on this, all right? Y'all know the song, O Come, Emmanuel? You know the tune? What I'd like to do is just use that tune and just three times, just prayerfully sing through these verses here. And as you sing them, just let the words, again, wash over you and fill your heart, fill your mind, fill your soul as we think about living love and uplifting lives this Advent season, okay? Oh, come forth, wisdom, bring to birth new life through all your vessels here on earth. Oh, come forth, wisdom, bring to birth new life through all your vessels here on earth. Oh, come. Come forth, wisdom, bring to birth new life through all your vessels here on earth. Amen. And so it is.
We